Welcome to the Spoolcast. Brian Suda joins Adam Churchill in this follow-up to his virtual seminar, Data Visualizations That Pack a Punch. Brian didn't have time to answer all the questions during the seminar, so we decided to address those remaining questions in this podcast. If you didn't attend the seminar, don't worry, there's plenty here for you too. And now, here's Adam.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Spoolcast. Recently, Brian Suda joined us to present his awesome virtual seminar, Data Visualizations That Pack a Punch. Brian's seminar, along with 110 others that teach the tools and techniques you need to create great design, is now part of the UIE User Experience Training Library, soon to be unveiled as UIE's All You Can Learn. Now, in this particular seminar, Brian shows just how his work with companies such as PricewaterhouseCoopers is defining just how powerful great data visualizations can be, especially when they're tied to marketing or social media campaigns aimed at raising awareness, conveying meaning, and getting users to interact. Hey, Brian, thanks so much for making some more time for us, and welcome back.
Not a problem. It's always fun.
So if we can start this way, people that weren't with us for your virtual seminar, can you give us an overview?
Sure. The seminar was about an hour, hour and a half long of me talking about some of the interesting data visualization techniques that companies are using today and looking forward into the future. Specifically, we wanted to kind of ease people in who weren't familiar with data visualizations and talk about the different types, you know, from basic charts and graphs all the way up to more interactive things, into these new kind of ideas of these simulations and how we can simulate and actually interact with the data further than just clicking on buttons and checkboxes, all the way up to sort of what's happening in the future. So we wanted to give people a really good grounding and understanding of what is out there and what the capabilities are. And we also talked about workflow, because any big company now is really kind of in this inflection point where how do we change our workflows so a lot of the data visualization work that we do and time and effort we put in can be repurposed for both print and for web and potentially other needs as well. And that requires quite a lot of thought and purposefully design put into it, especially nowadays with more and more devices with high resolution screens. So we talked a lot about the difference between rasterized and vector graphics when it comes to data visualizations. Along those lines, we also discussed a lot of the sort of how do you plan your campaign around your data visualization. A lot of companies will spend, you know, months working on actually getting some sort of product out there, but then they tend to fall down and forget about how to actually market that product once it's produced. I know a lot of people would finish the thing and then send a massive press release out. You know, in the past it worked, but there's always the risk of other news or something trumping you that day. And then all the time and effort you put into, you know, it's just crickets on the website because no one's actually visiting. So we talked about sort of not only planning out the production cycle to generate this data visualization, but also some sort of production cycle to promote it as well. And we discussed, you know, some of the ways that's possible. We also got into a bit more of the nitty-gritty, where we talked about some of the more common data visualizations that small and big companies have access to now, which in the past seemed quite daunting. For instance, you know, boring tabular data. We're all probably very used to sending around massive Excel files or Word documents with tables in it. And we talked about how we can spice that up a bit using HTML, a very cursory knowledge of JavaScript and other technologies to make it much more interactive and much more lively. Because I think a lot of people tend to forget that an HTML page will work offline just as well as a Word document. So we discussed data tables. We talked about sort of the next logical step from a data table into dashboard design, how to create a beautiful and useful looking dashboard for your company. And then we also talked about maps, because maps used to be one of these things that was really, really hard, and you might have only had one or two choices for the look and feel. And within the last year or two, it's really exploded in the flexibility and the design and having custom maps just for your need. So we kind of touched on some of the ways that people can get that in there. And then finally, we kind of wrapped it up with some hopefully inspirational ideas on not only the data visualizations that you have access to today, but kind of what I'm seeing, very, you know, tip of the iceberg, what's happening now. It's going to be really big in the next year or two.
Brian, there were a few people that had questions about challenges such as colorblindness and other accessibility issues with data visualizations. Any tips or thoughts on how to make those effective?
Sure. I think one of the big things that we try and always think about is the accessibility features. And when you start getting into these really complicated data visualizations or graphics, we tend to forget about how they were created in the first place. I think a lot of people might come from designing it on the back of a napkin and then transferring that into something digital, where I think it's better to, I mean, my background is in programming, so I tend to think about it from the sort of database, data store, how it's structured, and then move it to the design. So one of the ways that we can certainly make charts and graphs a lot more accessible, especially interactive charts and graphs, is to look at, again, something like JavaScript, where the design, the chart, and the graph are built client-side based on some of the data in the HTML page. So maybe in the HTML page, you have a boring table or a list of data, which then JavaScript will read through and then build the chart from that. So really, you get two big benefits from this. If you don't have JavaScript or some sort of accessibility screen reader or something, it will read the raw table values, which is perfectly acceptable. But also, search engines like Google can't index text that's inside an image or an interactive graph, but it can index the text that's on an HTML page. So a lot of the times when people are always thinking about accessibility, oh, well, how many people are going to actually, you know, have problems looking at my chart? I think one of your biggest consumers of accessible, ready sort of data and design are search engines. So it's been a big thing which we've always considered. On the topic of colorblindness specifically, that's one of those things that affects, I think, one out of every 10 males. And there's a few really nice apps out there. One that I tend to recommend is called Color Oracle. And it's a really nice little app that is for all Windows, Mac, and Linux. And it just sits in the tray, and you can actually change the entire color of your screen. So for a brief moment, you can actually kind of see the world through someone else's eyes. And it's really useful for just kind of spot checking every once in a while your design to make sure you've got enough contrast and color differentiation. So when you say something like, you know, take a look at the red line, or this line means this in your key, you can actually tell the difference.
What is a good way to make it obvious in your visualizations that the data you're working with or that you're telling a story with is fresh, that it's new, that it's up to date?
This is always a pet peeve of mine as well. A lot of the times I'll, you know, visit a web page or something like that, and it'll be a great article or a great tip, but there's no way to tell when, you know, the text was written. And the simplest and most obvious way to fix this is just put a date on it. You know, if an article said this was published in 2011, I might go and seek out a better tip or some better advice. If it was published a week ago, then I can probably trust that the numbers are correct. And the same goes for any charts and graphs. I think people tend to forget really simple things like put a headline on it to tell you what it means and put a date on it somewhere to tell people when the data was collected and generated.
Is there an easy way to convince clients or the people that you were reporting to on the project that these visualizations that simplify data are going to offer up a good return on their investment?
Yeah, that's always a tricky one. I think a lot of people are afraid to spend the time and money on developing a lot of data visualizations because, you know, maybe upper management thinks it's a fad or it's pretty pictures. But in this day and age, I mean, there's a lot of discussion of, you know, big data and how that's effective in big business, even small businesses. If you want to figure out if your data visualization is creating a good return on investment, I think then you really need to be smart and tie it to some sort of business metric. Maybe, you know, if you're an e-commerce site, your goal is to generate repeat buyers or change the price of the cart, have it, you know, people checking out with more expensive items. And the simplest way is, as you're generating any sort of data visualization, either for the customer or internally, you have to be able to tell if that is affecting some sort of business metric. You know, things like dashboards make it easier to make business decisions. Well, if it's easier to make a business decision, you can make, you know, more decisions per day, and it's quantifiable. So it's important that not only when you go forward on designing some sort of visualization, there has to be a why. Why are you doing this in the first place? And tying it back to some measurable business metric.
Brian, Jeff asks a question about this concept of opening up the big data within your organization and actually getting people to look at it and use it and try and understand it. What's your experience with what's been the key factors to determining the success or failure of that? And how do you train people or encourage them to explore and use the information at their end?
That's a really good question, because it's difficult to encourage people who don't necessarily want to, you know, if they're just not interested, it's hard to get them interested. And, you know, historically, a lot of charts and graphs tend to just put people off. And I think that's why we see a big explosion in these colorful, cartoony sort of infographics. And while those might generate some attention, and if, you know, if maybe that's your goal, that's fine. But they don't seem to have a very either good shelf life or not a very deep dive into useful information, because they don't let people explore things. In the presentation, one of the big things that I'm kind of harping on is that you want to shoot for building a tool rather than just a pretty infographic. Because if you can build a tool, that's sort of a central hub which you can drive people actually to, and it becomes a resource for people. You know, one example might be world GDP data. So every country in the world, you know, has some sort of GDP data that they might release annually or quarterly or something like that. And, you know, you could easily do a beautiful infographic about this every year, but the shelf life of that probably falls off quickly after it's produced. Where if you can build some central tool that, you know, either academics or journalists or anyone who's interested can go to and play with and click around and interact with, but also then sort of choose their own story. They might be able to say, I want to look at this country over this country, and then generate some charts and graphs from that. I think that has more sticking power. And I guess finally, one of the ways that we talk about in the presentation, but one of the ways to get people interested and generate interest might be to, you know, just think outside the box. We talked a lot about simulations, which take your interactive graphics and interactive visualization, but and take it to the next level where people can input their own feelings and sort of, I bet this is going to happen, and then they can play it out and see where it goes. But sort of the ultimate simulation is a video game. I mean, we talked about games like SimCity. I mean, SimCity is a massive data visualization of what's going on in the city, from, you know, transport to taxes to health and, you know, fire and police services. And that is a really interesting way to get people engaged in understanding by letting them, you know, into the driver's seat to play around with the data. And they don't necessarily even know that they're working with a data set because they're just playing a game.
Brian, we actually ended the virtual seminar with this particular question. It's a good one, and it gets people kind of looking around. What are some examples of some big companies that you've noticed that are doing some interesting, innovative, exceptional work with data visualizations?
Certainly at the moment, a lot of the big newspapers, New York Times has been doing quite a lot of really interesting, both infographics, interactive graphics, and they're using it to really advance and tell a story. And it's not just sort of supporting the story with a little sidebar with a nice, you know, bar chart or something. It's really part of the story where they talk about, the most recent one I saw was Mayor Bloomberg and how he was rezoning New York, and they can talk about it. And then they have this really beautiful interactive map that spins around and shows you the developments from year to year. So it's actually really part of the story. So if you're looking for some great inspiration, definitely newspapers like the New York Times, like the Guardian, are really on top of this sort of stuff. But another sort of big company that has really embraced big data and data visualizations throughout the whole company has been GE. And GE has a whole data visualization blog just dedicated to looking at the data within the company and some of their products and their verticals that they interact with. And it's really, really well done. And it shows that this isn't something that's only relegated to, you know, a small team of 5 to 10 people. This is something that a big sea change, even within a massive company like GE.
Patricia asks a question about trying to do it in-house versus not really being sure and outsourcing it to an agency. What are your thoughts about trying to do it in-house where you've got somebody with some web design skills, or really there's some agencies out there that specialize in it and maybe would do a better job? I think that's the concern. That's the question.
Yeah, there's always going to be a learning curve. I mean, if you wanted to do it in-house, it would be a long-term commitment because it's going to be a little while before the people come up to speed on both how to generate data visualizations, but also just the sort of politics and red tape within the company. You know, like data visualizations, whose role is it? Is it part of the design team? Is it part of marketing? Is it part of some online team which actually manages the website? So there's always sort of where does this sort of weird thing kind of fit into the workflow and the politics within the company? So bringing someone in-house is definitely going to be a long-term commitment. And on top of that, everyone in the company sort of needs to be committed to the project. They need to realize that, you know, if you wanted to be either more transparent or deal with the data, that individual silos, the verticals in the company need to keep the data in a format that the person, the data scientist, can actually work with. You know, if you want to be really guarding, you know, sitting on your, you know, data and only give it to them, people in PDFs, or not give it to them at all, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. On the flip side, hiring, you know, a firm on outside can achieve quicker short-term goals. Like if you needed a data visualization this quarter and you don't have anyone in-house to do it, it might be smarter to outsource that. You know, it's a great way to dabble in it as well. I mean, maybe the company isn't sure that this is what they want to do, or they don't feel that they have interesting data, or it's too sensitive, or maybe if we start doing these things, our customers are going to get scared. So certainly outsourcing to see if this is something you want to do is a great way to start. And it's probably a better way than bringing some staff in-house and then taking 6 months to a year to find out that it's just not going to work out.
So let's talk about those skills and how people get them. There were a couple of folks that were wondering, how do you get started in a career in information design, or specifically with data visualizations? And if you're already doing some of it, where are some places to get inspiration?
Sure. There's kind of two ways to approach it. I mean, I kind of think of data visualizations sort of a lot like photography. You know, photography, you know, is it the domain of the technical side where you're actually worrying about shutter speed and aperture and sort of the technical lighting aspects of it? Or do you come at it from the more arts and design side, where is it composition and, you know, thoughtfulness and what makes up a good picture? And I think data visualizations kind of sits in that same zone as well, because you can approach it with a design background. And in that aspect, I think a lot of the things you're going to need to know is, you know, JavaScript, HTML, CSS, getting these things from Illustrator or any other design tool onto a website online and interactive is going to require a technical background. I think if you're then coming from the technical side of things, if you are a programmer and you understand the databases and the JavaScript, there's a lot of design considerations that you need to think about as well. You know, what makes up, you know, like Edward Tufte has got a lot of books on sort of this minimalist design and really putting the data first and how to get your message across. So a lot of the skill sets overlap in the middle, but there's definitely specializations that if you're coming from a coding aspect, you need to know, and if you're coming from a design aspect, you need to know. But if you needed a checklist of sort of important skills, I would say definitely some sort of HTML, CSS for web-based. JavaScript in this day and age is a must. I would say Excel, some sort of spreadsheet tool. You know, as much as you might love it or hate it, you're going to spend a lot of time, you know, managing sort of Excel tabular type of data. And then I would recommend some sort of programming language. You don't have to be good at it. You don't have to consider yourself a programmer. But when people give you really nasty, gnarly, ugly stuff, you need to have a way to convert it around. And knowing a programming language even can save you loads of time as a designer, because as we talked about in the presentation, you can always, from code, generate SVG, and SVG can be opened up in applications like Illustrator and saves you loads and loads of time. So that would be my short list of skills that you would really need to understand before you can work in data visualizations.
Very cool. Well, your seminar was fantastic, and I certainly appreciate you coming back and joining us for a little bit more time on data visualizations.
Yeah, it's always great. It's an expanding field, and it's really fun because it's one of these, you know, new sort of online topics that you can really be, you know, in the cutting edge and on top of, in front of the wave. And it's really an exciting place to be.
To our audience, thanks for listening in and for your support of the UIE Virtual Seminar Program.
Purchase access to recordings of all of our previous virtual seminars in our virtual seminar catalog. Just go to uie.com/virtual_seminars. As always, thank you for listening.